Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable
absolutely
talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next on Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR. I'm Jay Moran, your host today, and we welcome back Anne Ryan, Executive Director of Read to Succeed Buffalo. Anne, thank you for rejoining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Always a pleasure, because you're talking about one of the things that I'm very passionate about, and that is reading. How about that? How about reading? What's reading like for you? Has it always been a part for you?
Something? It's always been a part of me.
Yeah?
Prior to going on air, we were talking about, you know, when we were growing up, there weren't the distractions of cell phones, of technology, of that instantaneous gratification. So I would go to the library. That would be my place to escape in wonderful books, and just kind of the quiet and the peacefulness of the library was always a solace for me.
Is that appreciation generally lost today?
I don't think so. I think a lot of families do take advantage of the Buffalo and Erie County Public Library system, and enjoy books in the home. Read to Succeed Buffalo really seeks to make sure that all kids have access to books and reading, because again, print access is so important. So if folks, you know, we'll promote the libraries till the cows come home.
Right.
There's incredible children's programming at libraries, and the new children's museum, well, not so new anymore, but the children's museum, again, excellent. They tie books in with every one of their activities at the museum as well. But print access is incredibly important for young children.
There's a lot to get into with Read to Succeed. I know you've got some different programs looking for volunteers, which is a big part of the program for sure. But let's just talk about reading in general, I guess, when it comes to the development of young people. How do children learn to read? What happens? I guess I'm asking you to step inside here, inside the brain, inside the personality. How do children learn to read?
Sure. So it's like breaking a code, right? So language comes naturally to us, but reading is not a natural process.
Okay.
It's a very intentional process that has to be explicitly taught, explicitly learned. And exposure to language from birth is truly, truly important, because reading starts with hearing, listening. So kids need to listen to language, understand that language is made up of sounds, right? And then understand when they're a little older that those sounds are tied to the code of language, letters, right? Alphabet knowledge, that the alphabetic principle of a letter represents a sound. And we make it really challenging in English because we have 26 letters
right
in the alphabet and then 44 phonemes that go with those letters. And then it progresses as children get more and more exposed to print and the sound of language, that they start seeing whole words, that those letters make up words, and they can get that automaticity that those sight words. They know, you know, basic words like a and the and for, all of those words that they have to automatically know. Because if a child has to spend too much time kind of decoding a word, they're not fluent in their reading, and they're not comprehending what they're reading. But it's a process that really begins at birth, right through third grade, that pivot point where children need to kind of move on from building that infrastructure of phonemic and phonological awareness, alphabet knowledge, vocabulary, oral language, to building fluency and comprehension. And if they can't make that pivot in fourth grade and beyond, they don't have the tools they need to automatically read, say, you know, those word problems in math or those problems in social studies or science.
Well, I want to go back in a bit to that key age group for sure. But let's talk just projected then beyond that. There's technology everywhere. Phones will do this. Computers will do that. And perhaps there might be some people, I don't know who they are, might say reading, it's not that important. What is that going to do for 8-year-old John, who isn't particularly good at reading and seems to get along okay?
Statistically speaking, if a child doesn't have that infrastructure built, that ability to read for content, read fluently, by the end of third grade, by age 8 or 9, they're statistically less likely to graduate high school.
Okay.
And if they do graduate high school, they may not have those skills to be college or career ready, because any job you get requires some amount of reading. Reading, you know, it's in our name, right? Read to succeed.
Right.
You need to be able to read. You need to be able to communicate in order to reach your highest potential. So again, if we want to increase our high school graduation rate, we want to increase the civic engagement among our population in Buffalo and Niagara Falls and this whole Western New York region. We want to ensure that we have a population that can earn a living wage and make sure we get our Social Security and retirement. We need to start at birth. These kids need to learn the infrastructure, that basic, those 5 or 6 pillars. And I do believe that New York State has gone and is really leading the way in their path forward and really making sure that we take that step back and teach teachers how to systematically and explicitly teach reading to our kids.
A college professor that I knew once upon a time said something along these lines to me: if you can read and you can write, you can think. What do you think about that? What is your assessment of that particular statement? Because it's one that has stuck with me ever since I heard it.
Yeah, I think it's truer words have never been spoken, right? And that's what reading gives you. Reading, being able to read literature, being grounded in the humanities, it allows you to think, but also kind of in contrast to maybe some algorithms that keep feeding you what you think back at you, reading can expose you to different worlds. Julia Bruckel, our director of program, quotes some research that really talks about books are a window into the world for children. Books are a mirror for children to see themselves in literature, and mirrors are sliding glass doors to open you into new worlds. And I think that really is what's so important about reading and access to stories.
We're talking with Ann Ryan this morning, executive director of Read to Succeed Buffalo. Let's go on back to those formative years, what parents could be doing and maybe what maybe parents aren't doing. For a lot of different reasons. And I know this is really kind of is at the core of your work is, you know, such a typical kid is has two parents, one who's not working and one is home all the time. They probably have reading skills that are generally higher. But on the other side of the coin, when parents aren't necessarily in place or are working all the time or have other issues as well, the results are probably almost the opposite, I would say.
I think there's truth in that. I think your first question is, what do parents need to do?
Yeah.
And learning to read is rocket science. Learning to decode language is difficult, hence why it has to be systemically and explicitly taught.
Okay.
Kids who seem to read naturally it's because they're exposed to more language. They're exposed to print in the home. They're exposed, you know, they go to the museum or the library or the, you know, museum of play, and they're talked to. They have those one-on-one conversations with adults. They say, ask a question. The adult gives really rich language, rich responses, and engages that child. That's how kids learn language first, by listening. So I would say that even in the poorest households, a parent can do that, right? If a parent, even if a parent isn't literate, they can still talk. They can talk about pictures. They can describe colors. And that's what it takes. There is research that ties the educational attainment of the mother directly correlated with the attainment of the child. But I think in the best of worlds, it's really, it can be much more simple to just surround that child with language and experiences and exposure. The Buffalo and Niagara Falls community is full of free opportunities for parents from Canalside to Niagara Falls. Just take your kid out, talk with them in positive language. You know, lose the command language. No, stop, don't go. And, you know, let's go through this door. It can be a portal to another world. Look at the water falling from the falls. How fast, how much water do you think is falling down? Those questions that really, higher order thinking questions. Get the kid to respond more from like no, yes questions to more active conversations.
How early are you advocating for, though, in terms of more of a beyond that, maybe more of a technical approach to teaching to read? How early, what age is, I guess, too early? Or is there even a too early an age?
There's certainly not a too early age to read and talk with children. Okay. That kind of formal language, like teaching letters and that kind of thing, 3, 4.
Okay.
Kids should be getting some sight words in their bucket, filling their bucket of sight words, kindergarten, first grade. First grade is really where that change goes from kind of learning, you know, sounds and representations of sounds through letters into kind of reading sight words and being able to build that.
So you're, of course, working to try to make sure that as many kids are getting exposed in many different ways. Your programs, what age are you focused on?
So we really, Read to Succeed Buffalo seeks to build a continuum, a vertically aligned continuum to, and really focused on economically disadvantaged children. But again, I want to be clear, every child needs this exposure.
Right.
And nearly every child can learn to read. There's research that shows 95% of children should be able to read. And right now in Buffalo and Niagara Falls, according to third grade ELA scores, New York State ELA scores, about 3/4 of our kids aren't reading at grade level by the end of third grade.
3/4.
That's an epidemic. So we start strategically to build that vertical alignment with a very simple program called Dolly Parton's Imagination Library.
Okay, sure.
It's a wonderful program, and it kind of goes into our conversation. So Dolly Parton grew up in very rural Tennessee, very poor, with illiterate parents. But she heard stories and they sang songs and she was exposed to language. And she credits that to her songwriting success. She's a singer, but she's also a very successful songwriter. And so she had this idea to send a free book a month to a registered child until their 5th birthday. So we have about 7,400 children throughout Erie County in 25 zip codes, and we targeted kind of the lower income zip codes across the county in partnership with Lisa Shimera, our deputy county executive, who really led Live Well Erie to fund this program.
Okay.
So we started in Erie County. United Way also has about a little less than half of the county covered as well. So nearly every child can register from birth to receive a free age-appropriate book into the home.
Wow.
So it's not economic, so anybody can register, but we really do try to target those households where, to your point earlier, you know, maybe they have two working parents and they're choosing between paying for gas or putting food on the table at this point, right? It's crazy expense-wise, the cost of living right now. And so getting that free book in the home, it's mailed directly to the child's name. It has inside many of the books are reading tips for the caregiver. So if a caregiver didn't grow up with books, didn't grow up being read to, there's great reading tips on why. How do you build vocabulary? How do you build that background knowledge? Background knowledge is so important because if a child comes to school and they don't have a lot of exposure when they're learning or they don't have a lot of vocabulary in their buckets, if you will, it's much harder for them to make that up, if you will.
What are you hearing about the responses from households that are getting these Dolly Parton books?
They love the program.
Okay.
We have pictures of kids running out to the mailbox because they know when they're coming. You know, my own grandsons, they're 2 and 3, and they get a book in the mail and they come running out. Nani, this is our new book. Read it to me. You know, I love how little toddlers will back up right into your lap and want you to read the book.
Sure.
And that's the purpose, right? Is at home to start exposure to print, start exposure to language. High quality picture books have higher level vocabulary than most primetime TV shows.
So really?
That starts that exposure right away to vocabulary that you might not necessarily hear in everyday life, right? And then to answer your other question, kind of the next level of the continuum is our direct service program. So we work with licensed childcare providers throughout Erie County, really embedding in those providers for 2 years, working to increase the intentionality of the literacy-rich environment and really to improve those interactions with children and caregivers. Next on the continuum is kind of why we're here to talk today,
right,
is our Experience Corps program.
Yeah.
So we partner with the AARP Experience Corps program, AARP Foundation, and there's 18 across the country. And we recruit, train, and deploy older, mature adults who have 4 or 5 hours a week to donate every week of the school year as literacy tutors in Buffalo and Niagara Falls. And these people are fabulous. Right now, we have 137 volunteers. They're so far this school year, they've already done about 11,000 sessions.
Wow.
One-on-one with students. And the superintendent released his strategic plan, and it really, Experience Corps couldn't fit better into that strategic plan for Buffalo because it's all about connections, connecting a caring adult with a child who's struggling in their reading to take the time, an hour a week, every week, to focus on that child's particular challenges in their reading.
So a little more than 100 volunteers. A lot of kids in those two school districts, Buffalo and Niagara Falls. So more volunteers are needed.
More volunteers are needed. We're looking to recruit about 30 new volunteers in the schools that we're currently working on. And we're adding another school in Niagara Falls and we're adding another school in Buffalo. So we're super excited about that. But if I were to have had a volunteer here, you'd hear from them about how incredible it is to see the progress of these kids. Because everything we do at Read to Succeed is supported by literacy coaches. So our child cares are supported by literacy coaches. Our preschools have embedded literacy coaches, teaching adults how to change and improve their interactions and to have that intentionality of literacy exposure. Well, it's no different with our volunteers. We have literacy coaches who have a place in the school, and they do observations on our tutors, and they share data with our tutors. So these volunteers take a personal responsibility on the improvement of the child's reading skills. And we use the district's own administered, in Buffalo it's Dibbles, and in Niagara Falls it's Ames Webb, but we use the district's own administered assessments to show the improvement of the child's reading skills.
And that data is shared with your volunteers?
That data for their particular students
is
shared.
Of course.
We don't share like name data, but in general, the aggregate for last year, we had about 80% of our students who were below grade level in achieve national benchmark in oral reading accuracy. So we know, in other words, the kids that we're working with, what they're reading accurately. They're reading those words accurately. They're improving in their vocabulary knowledge.
And that's attributed to maybe take me just a little inside, again, from the science or whatever you want to call it, what's actually happening here between this volunteer and this student?
Practice.
Practice. That's
practice,
all it is.
Practice, practice, practice. So we use books that are at the child's lexile level. So at their independent reading level, and they practice small parts of text, and they play 3 to 5 reading games that the tutor learns through pre-service training. And they play these games to have repeated practice. And the volunteer is there, that one-on-one, to give immediate correction, immediate feedback, ask those higher order thinking questions about the text, teach vocabulary, show a child what a glossary is. And the books that we use are really not only at the child's reading level, but they're a great mixture of fiction and nonfiction and poetry. I think poetry is a great exposure for kids on learning fluency and how to read with prosody and really how to have that, you know, obey punctuation and get some, you know, understand kind of what the story is saying.
There's so much inside this that is really fascinating. So I'm wondering then to get back to the tutor-student mm-hmm. relationship. Do we see some kids, even though maybe they were behind when they entered in this program, pick it up even that much faster than others?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
What do you attribute that to?
Again, I think it might be they were right on that cusp of getting it and they just needed more of that one-on-one exposure. So, you know, some of these kids who are below grade level, again, it's a lack of exposure,
sure.
right? It's not a lack of intelligence by any means. Learning to read is an intentional process. It's breaking a code and the kids can only read as well as they can break down that code. And that's why Read to Succeed, we really focus on vocabulary, fluency, and comprehension. And the quicker, the more we can fill that child's bucket with vocabulary that they can automatically recognize, the more they're going to be able to read with fluency. So that child might have had a lot of exposure to books, but just need a little more practice. Mm. Some kids need a lot of practice. Like my 3-year-old grandson, he knows his letters. He knows that a T is his name, Trey, and he knows, he can recognize T in other books.
Okay.
Not all 3-year-olds can do that or had the exposure to do that. But they need that if they're going to read as 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds.
How are you to tutoring your grandchildren? You're pretty good at it or what?
I'm good at reading to them. Okay. How's that? I'm very good at reading to them.
And we should add, a personal note, you became a grandmother again just before you came in here.
At 3:31 this morning. Yeah, yes, I did.
Congratulations.
My daughter's going to be very mad at me. I just announced it to the world. But mother and daughter are doing very good.
That's spectacular, of course, for sure. I guess, this may be a larger conversation, but and we can obviously get into it here. We have enough time. But so we see a pathway for these children.
Yes.
With volunteers to improve and get up to level. What is stopping that? What are the obstacles? What's happening?
I think in the past, it's because we waited to get excited about it till the 3rd grade reading scores were released.
Okay.
Right. Everyone's like, oh my goodness, 26% proficiency in Buffalo. Oh my goodness, 24% proficiency in Niagara Falls. This is a disaster. What are we going to do? Let's get some more, computer programs in 4th grade.
Sure.
And that's just too much, too little, too late.
Okay.
Kids, again, learn to read. They start learning to read by listening to sounds of language. Then they have to connect those sounds to letters. Then they have to connect those letters into words and those words into sentences, those sentences into concepts and ideas. And that, there's no shortcut to that. There's no silver bullet to that. No curriculum company's going to come and sell Buffalo the silver bullet that's going to fix it.
Right.
What's going to fix it is parents reading to their kids, talking with their kids, exposing their kids to experiences as infants and toddlers. Getting 3-year-old infants, toddlers, and preschoolers, right? Getting kids having that bucket fuller? Having a full bucket of vocabulary and experiences to take to school with them.
Right.
The expression ready for school is a bit challenging because school should be ready regardless of how the child shows up. But there is an obligation on the part of parents and caregivers to talk and expose their kids to language. Even if you're challenged yourself with literacy, doesn't mean you can't speak with your children. And really getting that quality of language, right? Using a lot of synonyms, door, portal, exit, using higher order thinking questions, not just yes or no questions, but what do you think that bird is doing in the tree? Do you think he has a family in that tree? What sound is the bird making? Just playing language games with your kids. And that's why Read to Succeed Buffalo, getting that army of volunteers, because Buffalo is the home, it's the city of good neighbors, right? We have 137 incredible human beings right now who are giving 4 to 6 hours a week of their lives and getting so much in return for that. Seeing that light bulb go off in that child, that first grader who maybe didn't have that language exposure at home, who in your words, you know, just excels all of a sudden when they get that one-on-one attention. And these volunteers might be the only one-on-one attention they're getting, because even the very best. And we have incredible teachers in Buffalo and Niagara Falls, incredible leadership in Buffalo and Niagara Falls. But it's impossible for a teacher of 25, 30 students to give one-on-one attention 2 or 3 times a week to students. It's impossible. And that's what this army of volunteers is going to do. 11,000 sessions already this school year, one-on-one with these students. And not only do we measure that increase of oral language accuracy and oral language fluency and comprehension, but we also measure social emotional growth.
Oh, really?
And we use a truncated panorama teacher education survey that our volunteers fill out 3 times a year. And one of the biggest improvements we see is in student confidence. So that first grader who might have been in the back of the classroom, that second grader who might have been acting out because they couldn't read and were uncomfortable, that third grader who just gave up, those students are the ones wanting to read that book that we give them at the end of their successful sessions to the class. Those are the kids who go home and read it to their dog or their cat or their little sister or brother. Those are the kids who become lovers of reading. And that's ultimately what we want, right? We want these kids to love to read. We have a great anecdote from one of our principals. So you've probably talked about on the show, and I'm sure you've heard of the challenges we've had with busing in the district.
Sure.
So one of our schools, all the kids were corralled into the cafeteria to wait for a late bus. And, you know, they could wait 1, 2, 3 hours. And so this child pulls out their Read to Succeed Buffalo book, and they're reading at their table. Mm. And the principal emailed us to say this was incredible. This child, who never showed an interest in reading before, took it upon themselves to entertain themselves with the book that Read to Succeed gave them while they were waiting for their bus. That, to me, says it all. Because a volunteer,
right.
Not Read to Succeed, a Read to Succeed volunteer taught them how to read that book.
Wow.
Along with the teacher. I don't want to say it was
all. Of course. But
it takes a village.
Right. And it helps to have a volunteer involved as well.
Yes.
We're going to come back with more with Ann Ryan. We're talking about Read to Succeed Buffalo. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media, The Bridge. Made by music lovers and powered by listener support. Locally owned and operated. Always independent. This is Public Media.
PBS Learning Media provides free learning resources like our series, Compact History. Follow Corey, a time-traveling middle school history teacher, as he journeys beyond your textbook. Learn how history surrounds us and includes you, and find activities and tools to expand your knowledge. Check out the Compact History Collection on pbslearningmedia.org.
A downed tree? A broken bike or two? And hundreds of miles between Buffalo and Brooklyn. That's the journey in Rolling Through, a new video series from Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Producer Pat Kelly is biking the Empire State Trail, exploring nature, culture, and how eco-friendly travel can connect us to the places we visit.
Oh, we are getting rain soon.
Cool, we can wrap it's coming.
New episodes of Rolling Through arrive every week. Watch on the BTPM YouTube channel and BTPM Plus.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. Our guest this morning, Ann Ryan, the executive director of Read to Succeed Buffalo. We've been talking about the mentor program, and we want to get into it most certainly before. Maybe we'll do it a couple of times. Well, actually, let's do it right now. If somebody is interested right now, what could they do?
Sure. They can go to our website, readtosucceedbuffalo.org, and there's a link directly to a sign up for one of our information sessions, or they can fill out an application right online and send it to us and set up an interview.
I'm always appreciative of the time that you and a lot of our guests give me even when we have these conversations, because I do have tend to get off on tangents a little bit. But as I was thinking about the volunteer or mentor relationship with the student, I'm also wondering about this somewhat pervasive attitude in society about kind of like what's being called like an anti-expert or doubting the expert when it comes to comes to whatever topic may be. And we're sitting here, we're talking about reading, and I'd like to believe that 100% people who would hear about this would think that, yeah, of course this makes sense. But I'm wondering if that does leak into conversations, things that you deal with from time to time, that people aren't necessarily all that open to expert advice when it comes to reading.
That's an interesting question. We do a pretty robust screening process for our volunteers.
Sure.
And one of the things they need to do is be able to take coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So coaching is an evidence-based practice. Josh Allen has a coach, right? He has a couple of coaches,
sure.
Right? He has a quarterback coach. He has a general coach. He has a conditioning coach. Everyone benefits from coaching. And if you want to achieve the skills, if you're a child care provider, we have literacy coaches who go in and embed in your program and help you improve your practice. In preschools and Head Starts, we have a literacy coaching program. Again, same thing, intentionality of practice. And the same is for our volunteers. We have literacy coaches who support them. And the schools love that because then it's little or no burden on the part of the teacher or the principal. Volunteers are work. We're not asking the teacher to figure out what this child needs. We come in with an evidence-based program. It's very structured. The school knows what it is. The school knows the skills we're focusing on. And the school knows the data that they're paying for, if you will, for
sure.
improvement. Because we don't want to go in and just make people feel good.
Right.
That's not our job. Our job is to go in and provide students what the science says they need to become proficient readers by the end of third grade, so they can read to learn by fourth grade and beyond, graduate high school, college, and career ready, be civically engaged, earn that living wage, contribute to society. So the volunteers that we recruit are asked a lot of questions about your ability to take coaching.
Mm.
Particularly, a lot of our volunteers are older, so can you take coaching from a younger person? These are our literacy coaches. There's a right way to do this. It's a very structured program. If you want to come in and teach dancing,
right.
That's not what we're looking for,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So we've had very, very few volunteers who haven't bought into that, who understand that. They also are required 2 full days of pre-service training. So they learn how to administer the structured session. They learn the literacy games. They learn the foundation. They learn the why. You know, what is the science of reading? Why is it so important? What are those ingredients, those 5 or 6 discrete skills that need to build that infrastructure of a child if they're going to become a fluent and reader who can comprehend what they're reading? So our volunteers 201 appreciate the coaching.
Mm-hmm.
They appreciate the science of reading. They understand it. And pretty much they come, the one skill we ask them for is the love of reading and the ability to want to work one-on-one with students. And Read to Succeed Buffalo is very data-driven. So we participated in a randomized control trial back in 2016, 17, 18 that tested the science of this model is based on one-on-one tutoring. But we tested small group because we wanted to help more kids.
Sure.
So we had groups of 3 or 4 students, and we had a national evaluation team come in, and a randomized control trial is the highest level. So you hear those like Ozempic commercials, you know, tested with 5 out of 10 people
right,
say.
Right.
Well, we do that in the social sciences
okay.
as well. So the RCT tested small group compared to one-on-one. And unfortunately, we found that even though everyone still felt great and we were helping more kids, it was wonderful, but the outcomes diminished. The outcomes weren't as strong as one-on-one. So we went back to one-on-one So our funders took that dive with us too, because we said we can't serve as many kids, but we can serve less kids according to the science and ensure that they can achieve what this structured session is set to achieve. And our funders stayed with us and really understood that, because again, it's not our job to go in and make people feel better. It's our job to go in and help these teachers who work so hard provide that one-on-one practice that just otherwise isn't there.
You've been at Read to Succeed now for 15 years, and you just mentioned, of course, understanding perhaps the benefits of the one-on-one as compared to a small group. So I'm wondering about some of the other things that you've seen in terms of science and understanding of information that I guess I'm assuming that there's still a lot to understand about reading. But let's maybe just talk about that concept of how things have changed, what we've come to understand now as compared to maybe a few years ago.
It's I don't think it's a matter of understanding, because the National Reading Goal Panel did their meta-analysis in 1992, I think.
Okay.
So we've known the science of reading. The science of reading isn't a silver
bullet. But it hasn't been as widely accepted.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think that's what's changed. So we've known how kids learn to read. What I think Governor Hochul, and I think the county executive, and I think the superintendent, I think they've all embraced the science of reading, promoting what are those ingredients. And again, it's five or six discrete skills, but they're intricately connected. And really understanding the science, and Governor Hochul and her Path Forward initiative really talking about how are we training teachers. Teachers could graduate with very little exposure to the science of reading, if any.
Really?
In their teaching practice, yes. And I think what's changed, to your point, is the conversation about the science of reading, the conversation that it's a both and. Really understanding that intricate connection between background knowledge and vocabulary knowledge and that path, understanding that language is made up of sounds. Those sounds are represented by letters. It's that all of those intricately connected skills. If children don't have that infrastructure and teachers aren't prepared to diagnose what they're missing, You can't build a building on top of faulty infrastructure, right? Kids can't learn to read without those fundamental six skills.
But you say that things have, the conversation has changed. Yes. I'm wondering, what took so long? What can you attribute that to?
I don't know if I can answer that question.
Sure.
I know that Read to Succeed Buffalo has been talking about this for nearly 20 years. We talk about the science of reading and those, again, what the National Reading Goals Panel, those six fundamental skills. But we also talk about the Joyce and Showers research, adult learning theory, how do adults change their behavior? And this might be a way to answer your question.
Okay.
So our programs are all based on literacy coaches who support not just the theory, but bridge the theory to the practice.
Sure.
So you can read a book. So for example, the Joyce and Showers research would say something to the effect of, if I'm at a big auditorium and I'm giving a teacher, you know, lessons on the science of reading, and I've got great PowerPoint, I'm very engaging speaker, those teachers tomorrow will take home about 5% of that content.
Mm.
But if I give that content and then I go embed myself in those classrooms and I coach those teachers through the application of what they learned, they can apply 90 to 95% of that. That's, I think, where it breaks down. It's an expensive paradigm to have those coaches embedded like that. A typical Buffalo school K-8 building, maybe 600 students, has one literacy coach.
Mm.
That's where the science is a little slow in catching up. Now we know what to do, but how do you change practice on the part of a teacher?
Then I'm wondering, are you seeing examples in other districts? I mean, Buffalo's We've had lots of conversations about the Buffalo Public School District from a lot of different angles. And I'm not one to criticize because it's a complicated goal that the schools have to achieve. But I'm wondering, are you seeing other districts that are kind of maybe changing how they're approaching the science of reading and how they're deploying their resources to support science of reading and then seeing success because of it?
Absolutely. There are models of smaller school districts who have done it. It's not a matter, I think one of the other challenges, it's not a matter of changing your curriculum necessarily. It's a matter of changing how things are administered and supporting teachers in that administration. Read to Succeed Buffalo would never presume to tell the Buffalo schools how to do that.
Right. They've
made incredible changes, and Ann Botticelli has led the way in the district of really looking at science-aligned curriculum and supporting teachers in the learning of that. Where a community-based organization wants to partner with the schools is where Superintendent Mubenga says is really critical, is those building those connections, building those homeschool connections, and building connections with students. And that's what our volunteers do. Our volunteers commit that 4 to 6 hours a week. They become a part of the fabric of the school. They become advocates because they see how hard these teachers are working. They see the leadership in these schools and how hard the leadership is working. And they become advocates for these students. And they really get to know their students. They become, and there's a reason, in nationally, in Experience Corps Foundation, they're called tutors. In Buffalo, we call them tutor mentors.
Okay.
Because the relationship that's built, 45, 50 sessions over the course of the year. These kids come to expect these tutors. These volunteers become a part of their lives too. They know the names of their animals at home. They know what they did over the weekend. And that's part of the secret sauce. That's part of the success. And I think that's part of what Dr. Mubenga is alluding to when he talks about connections. Kids need to feel connected and safe in their schools. And our tutors help become that adult that they're connected with. You don't need 100 friends. You might have heard this, right? You need one really good friend.
Right.
A child needs adults that they feel connected to, that they feel safe with, and that they know they're showing up every Tuesday and Thursday for Jay. Hmm. And Jay expects them to be there. And Jay's attendance might improve because he knows that Ann is going to be there every Tuesday and Thursday for him.
Sounds like a great opportunity for somebody who has some free time and likes to read. We're going to go to break, but before we do, one more time, website where people can find out more about becoming a mentor.
ReadToSucceedBuffalo.org.
All right, we're going to take a break with Ann Ryan, come back with our final conversation. We are talking about Read to Succeed Buffalo, reading in general, and of course its impact on the student population here in Western New York. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
What is BTPM Plus? It's an evolution of Buffalo Toronto Public Media that brings you the best of PBS, where you can watch your favorite programs live and dig into collections curated just for you. And here's the best part. When you stream BTPM Plus, you're not just watching, you're supporting your local public media station, the journalism, the arts, and the storytelling that keeps our community connected. Visit btpm.org/plus today. Stream smarter, stream local.
At Buffalo Toronto Public Media, we're committed to serving our entire community. Whether you're listening to investigative journalism on BTPM NPR, enjoying world-class performances on BTPM Classical, discovering new local artists on BTPM The Bridge, or immersing yourself in mysteries on BTPM PBS, public media has something for everyone. Explore programs that matter to you at btpm.org. This is public media.
From the fringes of the mainstream to the local music you love, listen to Buffalo Toronto Public Media at The Bridge Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on BTPM NPR at 88.7 or from your smart speaker.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next? I'm Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. My name is Jay Moran. With me, Ann Ryan, the executive director at Read to Succeed Buffalo. We really haven't gotten into this, alluded to it a little bit more, because the name says Buffalo, but Niagara Falls is a big part of your focus these days.
Yes, we've expanded to Niagara Falls last year. We'll be in two schools this fall. And what an incredible district. The people have been so welcoming, so... The new superintendent there, Stan Wooten, is just fabulous. So it's been a great partnership. People have really stepped up to volunteer and love being in the schools. They're just very welcoming environments. We're very lucky to be expanding there.
And establishing an infrastructure in Niagara Falls. I mean, I guess you have the roadmap in terms of the way it is in Buffalo, but are there challenges when you're... there have to be. Challenges,
of course. Yeah, they use a different curriculum. They use a different assessment. So, but again, Read to Succeed Buffalo is agnostic to curriculum. What we are grounded in is the science of reading. Those six skills that build the infrastructure of reading to learn, reading for comprehension. And so everything we do is true to that. So while it doesn't matter, sometimes we've got to figure out what our reports look like because the data looks a little different. But we're really, our goal with the with everything we do, really, from birth, but with the literacy tutoring and mentoring program is really to build those fluency and vocabulary skills through repeated practice, the playing of those five literacy games, and really just giving kids the opportunity for that one-on-one oral reading practice.
Yeah, you had that great anecdote about the young student who pulled out the Read to Succeed book while they're waiting to get on the bus, the late bus, which is outstanding. At the same time, and again, I know the programs have evolved over the years for Read to Succeed and understanding the science of reading. What do we understand, though, about these students who are going through these programs? You know, what do we know what is going on with them beyond these programs?
I wish we did. We don't follow them longitudinally, and we wish we could. It costs money to do that kind of evaluation, and if anybody wants to fund us to do that evaluation, we
sure.
will. Because the district does assign 900 numbers, and we could follow them.
Okay.
And would love to that opportunity. Because, again, the science of reading dictates that 95% of kids should be able, typical developing children should be able to read to learn by the end of third grade, if they have those supports right from the very start. And the vertical continuum that Read to Succeed is building is really, that's the goal. Have kids, infants and toddlers exposed to language, have toddlers exposed to print, have preschoolers exposed to print. Really make sure that their buckets are as full as possible with age-appropriate skills by the time they get to school so they can accelerate that learning. One of the lessons I think that you asked about in our preschool programming, in our three-year-old programming, is we administer an assessment that shows their oral reading level according to a national benchmark. And it's an interesting test because it's a test that you can use till you're 99 years old. They'll use it for an Alzheimer's baseline too, testing. But this Peabody Picture Vocabulary Test is a measure of oral language. And we use that with our threes and fours. And we can see that our 3 and 4 year olds are coming into programming. They're already 18 months behind in their oral reading vocabulary where they should be compared to the national benchmark. So not only when kids are coming to school in Buffalo or Niagara Falls, do teachers have to accelerate their learning, you know, get them from kindergarten to first grade, they also have to fill their buckets where they should have been coming in. And I think that's a huge challenge. Not impossible, again, but that's why we want to build this army of volunteers to help make that successful. recruit an army of volunteers from Buffalo and Niagara Falls and anybody who's listening who's willing to come to a school to build that one-on-one relationship to help not just accelerate learning, catch kids up, but also accelerate that learning so sure. they can continue on at an age-appropriate level.
Going to reference a conversation that we actually had before we went on the air, but I think it's worthwhile in this general discussion. When you were talking about, you know, the exposure to kids, you said, and you stressed the word, seeing things in print. The conversation we had before we went on the air was about screens, phones, the thing that is so prevalent. You know, I mean, kids are on screens. Yeah. I can't even imagine what age they are these days. Take me through that. Again, I know your focus is on getting these volunteers, these tutors into the classroom or into these children's lives. But talk to me about what we're seeing or what we're going to understand about, you know, the impact of phones and screens as compared to, like you said, print.
I'm not a neuroscientist, but I see them on TV.
Yes.
And I've seen a lot of research. The negative impact of technology in general, but phones in particular, or video in particular, there's a lot of nascent research about how it's actually changing the brain's structure. So we know in infants and toddlers, they're building tens of thousands of neurons, tens of millions actually, of neurons every minute in their brains. Brains are built between the ages, 85% of brain development occurs before the age of 4. So if you're introducing that screen, that moving picture to a child, it's rewiring the way their brains are working, and not in a good way.
Mm.
So limiting screen time is a must. Limiting shows that are where they're moving too quickly is a must. I mean, public television is a leader in educational television, and you'll see the way the intentionality with which they're filmed, the slowness, a lot of, there's a reason why Sesame Street had real people and puppets, right? That mixture of, if you will, fiction and nonfiction,
right,
if you will.
Right.
That intentionality is not necessarily available on a cell phone. Kids are, sliding through these pictures, and the research is not good with the way it's rewiring children's brains.
Your interest, of course, is in the student and also the volunteer. But do you ever hear from parents? Do you ever, do they ever reach out? Do they ever, have any interaction?
Well, our staff, during COVID, we heard a lot from parents.
Okay.
Because we were one of the few community-based organizations who continued tutoring and continued working with students through COVID. We went 100% remote. And as you know, the superintendent, again, released the data. The attendance figures in Buffalo were about in the 30s, low 30s, attendance for online schooling. Our attendance was in the 70s.
Wow.
Kids came because, again, they had that adult, that one adult waiting for them online. We mailed or we hand delivered all the materials to the tutors, all the materials to the students. And we had 80 students who were on 73% of the time with our volunteers. And that worked. So we heard parents in the background, saying, my child doesn't want to get on with, the whole group, but he loves this one-on-one. We see how parents are working so hard. They might have two other kids, three other kids in their apartment and trying to get them all on screen. So we had really positive feedback from parents during COVID. We're kind of a step removed.
Right.
But we do provide provide teachers with the data for their students. So their parent graphs, we call them family graphs, that show the child's improvement. And we are actually going to launch in the fall, again, the superintendent's call for more connections to encourage parents to read at home with their kids, encourage families to come take our dialogic reading training. That's another plug I should have. Hmm. We partner with the Family and Community Engagement Department to have two or three times a year read aloud training for families. Just again, teaching families those basic skills, how to take a high quality read aloud. And we give about 10 books to these parents to take home that are age appropriate for their student. How do you use a read aloud to build that vocabulary, build that background knowledge, you know, increase those conversational turns with your kids?
Well, if you didn't convince people to become a volunteer, I don't know what else you could say, because you most certainly have convinced me to the effectiveness of this and the idea that you can make a huge difference.
Huge.
If you do this.
Yes.
One more time, how does somebody become a volunteer?
Please go to readtosucceedbuffalo.org. And there's an online application, or you can just join one of our information sessions. We're actually having one today at 1 o'clock at the Meriwether Library.
Ann Ryan, Executive Director of Read to Succeed Buffalo. Pleasure talking to you. Thanks for the conversation today.
Thank you so much, Jay.
This has been What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.